White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. This is the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network. Your host for today's show is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy. So get a spot of tea, sit down and relax, because it's time for another show on the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network.
Good afternoon, boys and girls. It's Terrible Tommy back with you, and yesterday we had a problem. We had a screw-up again here on the board, yeah. And so we lost some of the show, but we didn't lose it. We found it, so we're going to, the first 19 minutes from yesterday, we're going to play back today and go from there. And on the Sky Religion we were going to read to you, well, I'm sorry, but it's not readable. We're going to have to retype it up, and then I'll do it again. Lone Wolf Radio here. Lone Wolf Radio here. This is Terrible Tommy in the bunker today, and we're going to start off this week. This may be a real cluster bang, I'll tell you, but I found a bunch of older manuscripts that I've dug out. And one was from John Jewell, and I know you like John Jewell. And the print's a little rugged, and the paper's a little brown, but so bear with me, and I'll try to read some of this to you and see whether you enjoy it. I'll probably have to reprint all this and get it in better print. This was part three, the Aryan Sky Religion. I'll have to make sure, maybe I've got the part one and two. Anyhow, one Cro-Magnon population, kindred to the tall, rugged Paleo-Atlantids of Northern Europe, had settled Russia, then became isolated in the thick forests, marshy rivers and valleys, and dense grasslands of the post-glacial southeast Russia and the Eurasian steppe, then such better watered and virtually one great parkland. Today largely arid, the soil then supported evergreen fir, birch, elder, elm, and ash, aspen, willow, beech, and other oak. And later oak, bears, and oryx, elk, wolves, foxes, badgers, beavers, and squirrel abounded, along with wild horses, pigs, and cattle, and hill goats to the Caucasus south. The original violent nature of the four-letter belies their present time nature. The wet, cloudy conditions existing for several millennia reinforced the blondism of the Cro-Magnon, and from the extreme isolation in the east, a new and distinct racial type emerged: tall, long-skulled, level rear skull, fine-featured and fair-colored blonde or red hair, eyes blue, green, or gray, complexion a rosy white. This was the Nordic. The weather became clearer with the intermittent violent thunderstorms. The fast sky dome overhead became the focus of life, sun, stars, and lightning. From this would arise the coming of the great sky father and the mortal gods from the stars. By 7000 BC, the late Tardanians age, end of the Neolithic or Middle Stone Age, spawned the domestication and grazing of stock animals and the molding of ceramic pottery. This culture stretched across Central Europe from the Atlantic to the Don, past the Don River into the steppes. Sheep, goats, oxen, cows, and pigs were tamed and herded. Sheep seem to have been brought from Anatolia, while goats from either that source or the Caucasus or Eurasia. In the east, the Nordic Aryans grazed hardy goats and later domesticated the horse. Here in the second Neolithic age, the Aryans invented the wheeled wagons and carts, starting with the male small vehicles pulled by tough billy goats, and then largely constructed with horses and oxen under rein. From the Aryans there came the horse cavalry, shaft hole battle axes, and the erection of megalithic standing stones and earthen mounds in the shape of the sky god. That was sky vessels dedicated to the male ego sky gods. In the late Tardonosian age, the previous use of caves, leather and bone from tents and from simple huts. I'm afraid I'm going to have to go back to the drawing board on this, because it's all there, but it's a little blurry and it's small print and it's sort of sepia brown paper. It's hard to read, and I'm not that good a reader like I used to be. I'll get it translated into better script, and then we'll go from there. Jules did tremendous work on this kind of stuff, and nobody else was doing it. Let's look into something that's killing a lot more whites than Negroes. Yeah, many, many, many more.
Agrochemical giant Monsanto has been having a very bad year, to say the least. But there's no need to feel sorry for the company. All their problems have been caused by their own greed, their own arrogance, and their own negligence. The year started off with lawsuits being filed against Monsanto for covering up the dangers associated with their blockbuster weed killer, Roundup. Scientific studies have linked Roundup to various forms of cancer, neurological disorders, and respiratory disease. Based on what we've seen from the company's own documents, Monsanto absolutely understood the dangers of Roundup, but they continued to downplay the risk in order to sell their product by the barrel to farmers and ordinary consumers around the world. But now that the heat is up on the company, they've begun marketing a different weed killer to people who might be concerned that Roundup could permanently endanger their health. That weed killer is called dicamba. Dicamba isn't new. It was originally patented in 1967, and it was used widely until stronger weed killers like Roundup entered the market, and the market share for dicamba died off. But with Roundup gaining public attention for all of the bad reasons, dicamba is quickly becoming the go-to herbicide for people who aren't willing to risk their health by using Roundup. This doesn't mean that dicamba is worry-free. In fact, some experts are now warning that dicamba may prove to be more toxic than Roundup as the studies continue. The main problem is that as of right now, the only long-term studies we have been conducted by Monsanto, and we know what that means. Dicamba's main ingredient is benzoic acid, so when sensitive areas of the body are exposed, like lungs and nasal cavities, the eyes severely burn. All types of burning sensations can overcome the human body. Dicamba is considered to be moderately toxic by ingestion and slightly toxic by inhalation or dermal exposure. Symptoms of poisoning include loss of appetite, vomiting, muscle weakness, slowed heartbeat, and even respiratory problems that show up as shortness of breath or central nervous system effects and muscle spasm. In addition to these symptoms, inhalation can cause irritation of the linings of the nasal passages and the lungs. If the chemical gets into the eyes, it can cause permanent damage, leading to partial or total loss of vision. The tests in some lab animals have revealed damage to reproductive organs, low birth weight, and even loss of pregnancy. The more we learn about dicamba, the more worrisome this product has become. I'm joined by attorney Kim Adams. Kim, first of all, I mean, it's pretty obvious. Monsanto is now pushing dicamba because Roundup is getting killed, and justifiably so, getting killed in the courtrooms, getting killed in the media. We now see the EPA was all part of it. It's an ugly, ugly story about Roundup. This is a dangerous product. So dicamba is there. What's your take?
Well, dicamba twofold. I think that Monsanto has to do something to fix the Roundup problem. Farmers can no longer rely on Roundup to have their crops grow. So they're losing crops to all of these Roundup-resistant super weeds. They also have, as you mentioned already, the cancer risk. You know, it took 30 years for Monsanto to come around and say or be called out on the fact that now we know that Roundup and glyphosate, the chemical in Roundup, can cause cancer.
Well, let me ask you about that. That really bothers me, because right now the only information we have about dicamba is the same thing.
Right.
It's all coming from Monsanto. We learned the last time that it all came from Monsanto, it was all phonied up. I mean, phonied up science,
right.
People dying from cancer related to it. Why should we believe that there's anything different about dicamba here?
I don't think that you can honestly believe it. I think that some of the older studies have been withheld. Dicamba, as you mentioned earlier, has been on the market for a long time, but it was used as a pre-emergent chemical. So they put it in the ground before they put the seeds down there. And dicamba was illegal to spray because it was damaging all these other crops. You have two issues here. You have crop damage and farmers going bankrupt, and then you also have the human aspect of the fact that we think that this is a potential cancer causer. Roundup and dicamba are often used to spray together.
Right.
So Monsanto has looked at this as a marketing ploy, right? Now they can develop not only a Roundup ready seed, but a dicamba and Roundup ready seed.
It never stops. How do you possibly believe this company?
Right.
I mean, where it comes to your family or to workers out using this. Look, what do we know right now about the dangers of dicamba? If just take what Monsanto tells us, because that's really all we have.
Right. Well, from a property standpoint, first off, we know that you have the users of dicamba, and that's overspray is killing millions of acres of property, right? You've got strawberry farmers, you've got soybean farmers that are not using Monsanto seed, and these farmers are stuck with, well, do I rip up all of my crop and now purchase the Monsanto Roundup and dicamba ready seed from the very manufacturer that's killed their crops? They're really in a tough position. So you've got the property damage aspect, and then you've got this human aspect, where you know that there has been, at least from European studies as well, evidence to show fetal death, evidence to show liver toxicity, evidence to show all of these same compounds, and these European researchers have sort of akin it to Roundup. We now know 30 years later, right, Roundup was, first it was a carcinogen, then it was not a carcinogen, and now it's a carcinogen in 2015.
Let me talk about that just a second. You know, you've covered this story before. You take probably more calls from people who have been injured by Roundup than anybody I know in the country.
Right.
I mean, you hear from them straight up when they call saying, I've got cancer, my father's got cancer, and the only issue that, and it's a very specific cancer, it's non-Hodgkin's lymphoma,
right,
caused by the Roundup. So what we remember there is that you had this company, Monsanto, that at first the EPA says, yeah, this stuff will cause cancer. That's in the 1980s.
Right.
And then about 6 years later, nothing's different. There are no new studies, but the EPA, the only thing that changes that there is money.
Right.
And all of a sudden the EPA starts saying, no, there's no cancer here. Then the World Health Organization comes out and says, absolutely there's cancer. That was 2 years ago.
Right.
And it causes non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. So with that history, given that history, and I know you've handled some of the biggest pharmaceutical cases in the country. I mean, no question, you've seen it firsthand. When you see a company trending like that, where they have completely lied to the government,
right,
totally lied to the American consumer, and now we're supposed to believe them on dicamba, what's your call on this?
You know, I honestly don't believe Monsanto right now. I think a couple of things have happened with dicamba. They were selling dicamba-ready seeds before dicamba, the new formulation, was even approved by the EPA. So they're telling the farmers, they've already told a story to them. Here's these great seeds, your yield is going to be great, but don't use dicamba yet because it's not ready. And so they've sort of misrepresented the effectiveness, and they've misrepresented what the yield would be. They've sold out these farmers. The farmers were the ones being penalized to begin with.
How are the farmers recovering right now? What are they doing? They say, okay, I've been sprayed with dicamba. I'm worried about it. I'm worried about my crops. I'm worried about my family. I'm worried about my workers. What are the farmers having to do?
The farmers are having to litigate. They're being left with no recourse. One, state-funded governments, a dicamba damaged crop
right.
is not something that the state will fund the farmer for. And so the farmers are trying to prove that it was dicamba. Then they have to go through all of this litigation for years and years against Monsanto to prove that their crops were damaged by dicamba. We have seen cases where the state has tested the very same crop 2 and 3 times, no dicamba. They take it to an independent facility, dicamba.
Okay, so, now that's a great point. In other words, when the government is involved, oh, we don't see a dicamba problem.
Right.
I want to talk about that. When independent testing is involved, yeah, it's right here. Here are the lab results. It's all over the place. We saw exactly that with Roundup, didn't
right.
we? The
yes.
EPA bought into this thing. And now we find out it was actually driven by politics, by leaders in politics,
right.
that you would be appalled if you heard their names of the people who actually drove this. You know, Hillary Clinton, she was dinged in the last election about her love affair with Monsanto.
Right.
Same on the Republican side.
Right.
There is no safe side where it comes to corporations versus consumers. What's your take, generally?
Well,
and what we found in Roundup, right, is now we see that a lot of those same people that are approving this product to not be a carcinogen, then to be a carcinogen, are now the very people running the show at Monsanto. You know, they come in, they're hired help now at Monsanto. So they have, it's in their best interest to defend how this product came on the market to begin with. So I think it's a dangerous.
Yeah, I'm real concerned about something. We learned in Roundup that basically the EPA was part of the scam.
Yeah.
The EPA actually participated in the scam on putting a product on the market that caused non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Right.
Okay? Now we find out some of the people that were involved with that also went to work for Monsanto.
Right.
So it's a telephone call. It's isn't it the same story?
It is.
That is it's the golden rule. Those people with all the gold make all the rules. And that happened here. Don't you see it happening already with dicamba?
I definitely do. And I think that dicamba is a long litigation, unfortunately, because you not only have the farmers who are out the money for the seeds that are not working like they say they were, but they're also out the money for all this new equipment. They're out the money for using a product that carried a much greater risk than they anticipated. You've got farmers whose crops are being damaged. They have no idea where the drift came from. This drift is not just across the street.
Yeah.
It goes for miles and miles.
Kim, you truly are one of the finest female trial lawyers in this country. One of the finest trial lawyers, period. But thanks for being out there.
I appreciate it.
Coming up.
Well, that's one of the reasons I moved out of farm country in Indiana, because I was surrounded by hundreds and hundreds of acres of corn, and they were bringing large, large tanks of Roundup onto those fields and spraying all over the place. In the last couple of years I was there, my health wasn't near as good. So, we can talk about blacks all day long and Jews all day long and Mexicans all day long and you name it. But when these giant corporations are committing chemical warfare on their own people, because most of those people who run those companies are white, then you got a war going on, a war of extermination just for profits. As long as they can get the profits and maybe figure some way of moving offshore to an island or something, they're going to do it. And so it's very important you understand. So those big corporations are pulling scams all over the world, not only in third world, screwing those people up, messing their agriculture up, but they're using it right here in the United States, chemical warfare against the white race. So you hear the right wing going on and on and on about a lot of things, but how many of them are touching on the problem of chemical warfare on the land and the destruction of the land and the environment? You don't hear hardly any of that on the right and conservative, so you got to get it from someplace else. And that's what I intend to do. I need to go wherever it's at to find the truth. There's a new book coming out about the order and a lot of our heroes in it. So as the people who are putting it together do research, they're sending me partial pages of it to see what I think and whether I approve. The following is the latest installment. Matthews would gather around him some of the most noble men of their time, and together they confiscated millions from the Jews and gave the money back to the people. It is important to know that when they began, it was the utmost secrecy. They openly declared war on the government only after they'd been exposed. Space does not allow for us to go into further detail, nor tell of each of the valiant men who stood loyal for the order, nor what drove them to make such sacrifice. See The Unbroken Warrior book by Richard Scutari. Pastor Miles does a fine job on that later in The Secret Army, but the one member of the Bruder Schweigen that we must address is the man that Matthews had named their chief propaganda minister, Mr. David Lane. Lane was a Klansman turned Wotanist. He had little love for the Masonic clan of the old. He'd already crossed that bridge. It is difficult for an upstart to have sympathy for those he had to leave behind because they still commit the same errors. But the truth is that he is a fine example of the evolving spirit of the Klansman, an avid writer and author of the famous 14 words. There is much for us to ascertain about the transformation of the Klansman from his writing, which was mostly penned in the 22 years he spent incarcerated as a loyal member of the order. We will be hearing more from Mr. Lane in the following section. His friend George Balderson sent to us a quote by Lane that really said it all. In the year 1889, divine providence brought forth to this earth a returning spirit conceived within a child of destiny and dedicated to the preservation of nature's finest creation. 56 years later, that child of destiny left Midgard, having done all that was asked and that all that was possible to the appointed time. But the indomitable will does not die with the body. He left us with these words: "My spirit shall return, and my people will know that I was right." It matters little whether you perceive spirit as a mystical force or as a practical result of effort and teaching. Either way, it was his spirit that moved George Lincoln Rockwell to. It was his spirit that moved Robert J. Matthews. It is his spirit that moves those of you who are here today with noble motives. It is his spirit that formed and generated the 14 words. And he is still generating. In 1988, came from the Fort Smith trial in Arkansas, in which several members of the Bruder Schweigen were put on trial for sedition, along with Bob Miles, Louis Beam, Pastor Butler. And I must interject, they wanted to get me, but I don't know why I didn't get swept up in that thing. But I went down there and I stood right there unembarrassingly and supported the guys during that trial. And that's where I had a major break with the right wing. There were several other people that were charged in Fort Smith. And we had a meeting, and I was going to stand up and give a speech supporting all the men that were already in prison. And it was Dr. Fields and that scrawny little bastard from Arkansas, I forgot his name, that told me I couldn't speak if I was going to include those already incarcerated guys in my speech. And I said, by God, if I can't support them all, I won't speak. And there were a lot of skinheads there, and they were looking at me like, what's going on? And I couldn't tell them because they'd have torn that place apart. So there we had, right in the middle of a trial, guys for their lives, the right-wing bastards were trying to tear up the situation. That was a very interesting thing, and that was marked the very time that I left the right wing end of the racial movement. And like I say, if I'd have gave the word, that place would have been torn apart. But I didn't want to see an insult to Miles and Butler and the rest, so I kept my mouth shut. Well, anyhow, they were not found guilty. They were acquitted, which was a miracle. And I don't believe in miracles. Pastor Butler had been going through another show trial in California in which he, Tom Metzger, and the order members, Randy Evans, Frank Silva, David Tate, had all been arrested at a Klan-type event for lighting of a cross. Actually, it was just for being there, not just the cross. They had a Jewish, Ira Reiner, Jewish DA in L.A., and he was wanting to use this for headlines. Metzger said it was a Mickey Mouse trial. It was, but they just could not resist getting their hands on the pastor. Pastor Butler was the leader of Aryan Nations in Idaho, a major inspiration to many of a younger generation, moved by religious fervor of an early Klansman, Dr. Wesley Swift. Butler would leave California and an impressive career as an aerospace engineer to found his Church of Jesus Christ Christian, Aryan Nations, Christian Identity in Idaho. His Aryan Nations is where several of the Bruderschweigen would congregate. And here lies the beauty of the order. Left, right, Wotanism, Christian, and so on. They didn't want to hear it. They put those differences aside. They knew the enemy, and that was what mattered, a disposition reminiscent of Adolf Hitler himself. They had their separate beliefs and passions, but the bottom line was race over all, and still is. And that's the end of that. That's going to go into a new book that's going to be published before too long. It's true, Butler and Miles and I, we had several differences, but we never allowed it to get in our way of the race. Actually, I was just as much a supporter of Ben Klassen and Nature's Eternal Religion and the White Man's Bible as I was the rest of these people. I got along with all of them. Well, here's a note from one of our friends in the Southwest. T.D., I've been reading about the Cabaret Society of Berlin in the 20s. And it looks to me like history is repeating itself here in the USA today. Then it was all a matter of lewd conduct was okay, and today the sky or the bottom is the limit as far as this crazy behavior is concerned. It sure looks to me like a race to the bottom, the way this country is turning into a corrupt ghetto, and there seems not to be much concern about it. What do you think? Well, I think you're right in a lot of ways, but I think you can. There was a lot of crap going on in Berlin. Most of it had a homosexual base. But I don't know. I like to dance and sing and have fun, but I don't like to be lewd. I haven't been lewd for a long time. But I agree with you. That's the way it's going. I mean, there's no depth that they will not go to nowadays. Anything, any absolute sick perversion is okay now. In fact, it's to be protected by the U.S. Constitution. How about that? Thanks for the note. But I'll make a small admission to you. When I was in the United States Army in Europe, I went all over Europe and I found some prostitutes, white prostitutes, to be some of the finest women I knew. And I think that that's something that a lot of conservatives wouldn't admit to. I keep hearing this stuff about we're a country at war with itself. Well, most thriving, vibrant countries with a vibrant population are at war with itself. That's evolution. That's the natural order. That's good. There's got to be things that you're worth fighting for. And that's a part of it. These lackadaisical, totally conservative populations in some countries in the past, and even in this country, have been a waste of time as far as Mother Nature is concerned. So let's get on with this war against ourselves. You know, Nigel Farage over there in Britain, he's just been condemned severely over the Jewish lobby comment he made on a radio show. Mr. Farage, hosting his LBC radio show, referred to a, quote, powerful Jewish lobby, unquote, operating in America. Gee, that's something else. I wonder how he figured that out. Everyone's running around worrying about waking up the public, and you think that they still are so stupid as to think that they want to be woken up. They don't want to be woken up. They're crying. Everybody's crying about these drugs. They love these drugs. The majority of these people that are on drugs love the drugs, no matter how their life gets fucked up. You got to go back to Might is Right on this stuff. If they're going to take the drugs, they don't care what happens, and they don't care what happens, and let them take the drug. Give them free drugs. Get them out of the way. Thin down the population, even if they're trash whites. Because if they want to commit suicide, they're going to commit suicide. There's nothing goddamn thing you can do about it, and there's not a law you can pass that'll stop it. Of course, there is one way, like they do in the Philippines over there, just shoot them in the head, you know. All right, boys and girls, I just lost so much empathy and sympathy for people. Because I observe them. They don't want to be saved. They're happy with the corruption. And if you try to help them out and get them on the straight and narrow, they're going to turn on you and maybe kill you. You just have to take care of your own family, your own people, and weather the storm. That's what it's going to be now for at least many decades. Just weather the storm. I just got an email in here from a longtime activist whose heart's in the right place, I'm sure. And his whole email was great until they got to the point where he said, we have to support and run candidates. We got to pick the right candidates. And to that I replied, support candidates? You got to be kidding. I would take my chances with a dictator. Then you basically only have to kill one person. That's the slate date in the game. When you look at what the politicians are like and the way they respond to any question about race, then you don't really think that that's the way to go. I hope I can jog this guy back on track, because he's getting off in the weeds there. He's getting off in the swamp. Somebody sent me a little note here. In fact, it's more than a note. It's 2 or 3 pages, but I'm not going to go through it all. That the Department of Defense is scheduling a blackout during the Antifa protests in November. I have a problem with that, but anyhow, you've heard of it. There's a big blackout. You'll know what it's all about. Feds are doing it, supposedly. Well, Bridgeport, Connecticut schools are right in there with the boys. They've got it all figured out. A few days ago, the same week the death of the Chinese-American poet Fei Chang was reported, who I never heard of, Bridgeport, Connecticut announced that it will require high school students to take a course in Nigger American Studies, Caribbean Latin American Studies, or Perspective on Race in order to graduate. So you can't graduate unless you get your brain washed. And you can bet that's the true history of the non-white races. Well, let's see here. Neo-Nazis and white nationalists descended on two Tennessee towns Saturday to protest refugee resettlement in the state. Well, they've already resettled about 40,000 at least. I think you're running a little behind times, boys and girls. It's too late for that. It's too late to go out and demonstrate against it. There's only one demonstration you need now. The white nationalists and neo-Nazis called the protest White Lives Matter, copying the niggers. Rallies and the first descended on Shelbyville, Tennessee. They carried Confederate battle flags and signs as they marched, and I'll bet you half the white town was demonstrating against them. Counter-protesters tried to drown out the messages of hate with chants of acceptance and inclusion and race mixing by chanting, "Refugees are welcome here. We love to fuck them dear, near and near." They appeared to outnumber the White Lives Matter protesters because these whites don't want to survive. They don't want to survive, boys and girls. Let them go. Let them go. All we need is a seedlings for the next generation. They're around. Don't waste your time. With an economic collapse in this country, all hell's going to break loose no matter what. There was a heavy police presence at the rally, which kept the groups largely separated. The state, you must be separated. Well, we want to be separated. Well, we mean really separated from you guys, you know. No violence was reported, and by late afternoon, police had only made one arrest. Oh, man. That's a hell of a mess. Only one arrest. We want to beat the shit out of those Nazis. Far fewer white nationalists and neo-Nazi protesters showed up at the later rally in Murfreesboro, and one organizer tweeted that it had been canceled. Oh, boy. You embarrass me, boys and girls. You embarrass me. But the system's not too worried about me being embarrassed, so you're okay. You're all right. Here's a big story. White woman punched for being with black man by White Lives Matter protesters. Well, I think they're quite fortunate that they only got punched. I can think of some places where it'd be more than punch. Neo-Nazi and white supremacist groups descended on Shelbyville, Tennessee, U.S. on Saturday for an organized White Lives Matter rally. The rally attracted hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands, of anti-racist protesters who easily outnumbered the white nationalists. The couple, a 30-year-old white woman and a 37-year-old black nigger man, were eating inside the Corn Pub on Brentwood, a town about 50 miles north of Shelbyville. Nashville police said a group of about 20 to 30 white men, Nazis, and women came into the pub and sat behind them. The woman later told police that one of the group's members asked her to guess, and she responded, "White Lives Matter." Another is believed to have said, "That's right," before telling her to join their table and leave her boyfriend. Well, I'll tell you the way we used to handle this stuff. We'd look at the guy, the black guy, and say, "Why have you lowered yourself to run around with this scum?" And that always gets our attention. Almost bet money that the guy that smashed this race-mixing white broad in the face was a plant, an informant, an infiltrator, because they feel they can get away with it and they enjoy it. Yeah, I'll bet you. Plus, it makes damn good news for them, you know. White man punches white woman in face. Of course, they do it all the time. Married couples do it all the time. It's not very nice. Blood can be seen streaming down the woman's face. Well, check that mixed races out on Saturday night when a nigger band gets drunk and how he beats the shit out of white women. They don't want to talk about that. White women that hang around with niggers got to know that that's a common thing. Every Saturday night when the nigger gets drunk, he comes home and beats up on the white woman. But that's all right. That's a different story. Well, there'll be another federal arrest of some of these guys doing that shit. And you'll do time. Well, the media got another circus, New York City. And it took them about 2 hours to figure out, is this a terrorist or is this not a terrorist? Is this a terrorist or is it not a terrorist? Well, it would seem to me that any way somebody runs over somebody and kills them, that's sort of terrorism. It surely struck terror into the hearts of people riding bicycles down the street, that's for sure. I knew it. Before it was over, the guy was screaming, "Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar." I'm IRA. I'm not in FATA. I'm IRA. Allahu Akbar. That's a cue for the State Department to bring in 50,000 more people from over in that area of the world. Maybe 100,000. Settle them right in the middle of Tennessee like they did already. Yeah, come on, bring them on in here. They'll be good American people, almost like white people. Oh, yeah? 8 dead, 15 injured. Well, when's the next one going to be? Tomorrow? Next day? Soon. Because we love those Arab Muslims. We love them Arab Muslims. Turns out this guy was an Uber driver. Boy, you better not get a ride with that Uber driver. Cops were poor at aiming. They shot him in the ass, and he lives. Well, vehicle terror attacks become the new normal. Well, of course, they're simple. They're very deadly. They're big. They're heavy. You can go real fast and aim at some people, and why wouldn't they? That's classic guerrilla warfare. I'm not sure whether I read this to you before or not. I'm losing it. This was from Horrible Harry, or just plain Harry. I sent out a bunch of pictures of old newspaper articles from war. I sent them to you guys. Good memories. In fact, I remember the one with Wolfen at the beginning. I was a young guy back then. Wish I could get in a time machine and tell the young idiot a thing or two. Those news articles are a blast from the past, a little before my time, 10 years or so. But I remember when I started hanging out in Southern California, people were still talking about those demonstrations. Too bad the fucking alt-right didn't learn something about marches and demonstrations from you before they went out and making fools of themselves. What is it about the white race not learning from history? I just finished a book about the history of Venice called City of Fortune. I highly recommend it. To sum it up, Venice used to be the mightiest naval power in the world and ruled the seas. They developed the most advanced form of maritime trade still used today, but in the 12 to 1500s, the city-states of Italy were so busy fighting amongst themselves. When the Turks invaded, they were too depleted to stop them. Most of all, Eastern Europe fell to the Turks because of greed and jealousy among whites. Sound familiar? Now Venice is just a tourist trap with a couple of gondoliers singing, "Oh, Sol Mio." Thanks, Harry. I needed that. The latest entry into the classic Wolfenstein games franchise tells the story of an alternate universe where the Allies lost World War II. And it could have very easily happened if Hitler hadn't screwed up. And America is now governed by the Nazis It is not, as you might think, however, a documentary on our lives in 2017, but certain aspects of Wolfenstein II, The New Colossus parallel our real world with unsettling accuracy. Yeah. 2014, the development team at the Machine Works thought an alternative reality Nazi America sounded like a great kooky premise for the follow-up to the hit Wolfenstein New Order reboot. Then we started living in a bizarro world where the white supremacy defending reality TV president sits in the White House. And suddenly Wolfenstein 2 started carrying a whole lot more weight when it came to the current political climate in America. When the IRL president of the United States claims that there were very fine people at the neo-Nazi Charlottesville rally, a game about Nazis being bad suddenly becomes a bold political statement. To be clear, it shouldn't be, but apparently it is. Easter eggs that feel way too close to home are peppered throughout the game, shedding little light on the relationship between Trumpism, fascism, and the rise of the neo-Nazis in IRL America right now. Because in the alternate universe, darkest timeline, that is 2017, the truth can often feel much stranger and more frightening than fiction. Yeah! So here are some of the most depressing real Wolfenstein 2 Easter eggs, showing the parallels between the game's literal fascist Nazi regime and the American politics of today. I hope they keep making games like this because there's a certain percentage of the young people are going to go the right way, not the right wing way, the racist way. Let's see here. There's a headline here, how populist fascist morons rise to power in a democracy. Oh, man. And it goes on with quite a bit of that. Yeah. So there's a game out there, Wolfenstein 2, you might want to get. Give it to all the little kiddies. Because a certain percentage of them are going to go our way. Whatever way that is. It's a very violent game, and it's not the alt-right way, I'll tell you that. It's very sad to see that Netflix suspends the House of Cards production before finishing the final season, because I don't care Kevin Spacey's a fag or not. he shows he's a totally rotten, scheming, crooked president, and his wife's just as bad. That's what I want the American public to see, so it might finally get into their heads that no matter whether you go Republican or Democrat, they're all corrupt as hell. And I love that House of Cards because that showed it very clearly. But now, because Kevin's been outed as a homosexual, they're going to destroy my whole video enjoyment. The vision of Kevin Spacey being homoed down on a guy just sort of takes away the dictatorship position he has in the show. It's pretty hard to think of him as a hard-boiled dictator, I'll kill anybody that gets in my way, when you can picture him on top of a guy. Some comments on Wolfenstein 2. The Wolfenstein pinball machine is a strong contender for the most depressing video game Easter egg of 2017. You know, this is going to really deflate the liberal left or the Bolshevik left when they see this game. It's going to depress them. It should depress them. This out-of-order pinball machine with a game entitled Yes We Can should sound familiar. It's a reference to President Obama's campaign slogan from back when we didn't live in an alternative reality Nazi America. We lived under a nigger reality America. One of the most corrupt presidents that's come along. But you asked for it. You want a nigger man at the head of your government, and you got him. Make you feel better, boys and girls? I don't think so. These optimistic words that promised a bright future should also stand in clear contrast to the slogan that won Donald Trump the 2017 election. But the Wolfenstein developers have a response to Trump's backwards promise that only he can make America great again for a white CIS man. And it's hearty rallying cry of make America Nazi free again. Where are all these Nazis at? I've been looking for them. There's no Nazi party. Nothing that can be called a real Nazi party. I mean, you know, fascist? Where are all the black shirts marching down the street? This is all bullshit, and that's really fake news. It's got to be fake news because they're not there. Well, you mean a half a dozen guys in Levi's and T-shirts to get together and wave the Confederate flag? The flag of Southern capitalism? Huh. Posters, newspapers, and even alternate universe versions of the original Wolfenstein 3D game demonstrate another common tactic of fascist regimes. Propaganda that paints anyone who resists their tyranny as villains. Gee, I thought that's what the left-wing Bolsheviks do. Anyone who disagrees with them, that's them. They don't even realize it. In Wolfenstein 2, you can play a fully functioning arcade game called Wolfenstein 3D, a replica of the real-life original Wolfenstein 3D. Except for a few key differences. Instead of playing as a Nazi murdering hero, B.J. Blazkowicz, sounds Jewish, you play as a Nazi. And instead of killing Hitler, your objective is to kill the horrifying terrorist criminal known as B.J. Blazkowicz, obviously a Jewish, sort of a Jewish name. Let this game serve as a reminder to those who seem all too ready to call resistance groups like Antifa Bolsheviks, which stands for Anti-Fascist Bolsheviks, terrorists, while hesitating to use the same label to describe the actual acts of terrorism perpetrated by white supremacists. A clip from Die Neue Wahrheit, which translates to the New Truth, in Wolfenstein 2, you come across a headline urging readers to meet the dapper young KKK leader with a message of hope, unquote. We wish we could sit back and laugh at the sheer ridiculousness of this headline, but we can't. Because it's true. Because the progressive media outlet Mother Jones ran an uncanny similar one last year that offered readers the chance to meet the dapper white nationalist riding the Trump wave. Guess who that is? Not Duke, it's the new boy on the block. Mother Jones wasn't the first or the last in media to portray white supremacists in a sympathetic light, either. From the Washington Post to the now canceled KKK reality TV show, our real world media doesn't seem to understand the issue with giving white supremacists a national platform which to spout their insane bullshit from. Wow. Gee whiz. If you replace the German army, unquote, with neo-Nazi white supremacist scum in this newspaper clipping, it could very well describe the countless times Donald Trump openly offered to surrender our country to racist, sexist, white supremacist supervillains throughout his presidency. No, not to those guys. You got to surrender to the bankers like they always do. This tickles me how they try to paint Trump as a big, bad, white racist. Just take a gander at his cabinet members like Steve Bannon and Jeff Sessions. Jeff Sessions? He's such a milquetoast little bastard. Or flirtations with the KKK leader David Duke, man. And alt-right dickwad Richard Spencer. Whoa! And every other neo-Nazi or white supremacist piece of shit our president bent over backwards to accommodate while also finding the time to make healthcare more expensive for impoverished Americans. I think that's what Obama did, isn't it? Isn't that what Obama did? Oh, but he's black. That's different. I'm sorry. So please, everyone, let's take Wolfenstein 2's story as a cautionary tale. rather than accidentally using it as a roadmap to actualize neo-Nazi ruled America. You caught it. I'm recommending that game to every kid. I'm going to stand outside schools with a big sign. You'll love Wolfenstein 2. Get all these little kiddies watching it. Yeah. What do we need propaganda for when we got these guys cranking out games like this, man? This is great stuff, man. I'm all for it. Promote it. I gotta quit if I have any more fun. If I get more excited. If the enemy does me any and you any more good and falls into our hands, I'm gonna have a heart attack. I love it when your enemy does the work for you. I'll see you tomorrow.